Breaking news from CNN Radio, I'm Andrew Spencer. Over Libya, a no-fly zone is now in place. Joint Chiefs Chairman Admiral Mike Mullen tells CNN's State of the Union.
The initial operations have been very effective, taking out most of his air defense systems, some of his airfields, yet there is still, I think, a great deal to be done.
As coalition airstrikes take out convoys and communications facilities, Connecticut Senator Joe Lieberman says the world cannot allow to let Muammar Gaddafi remain in power.
If Gaddafi survives, the Arab Spring maybe comes to too soon an end. At least it doesn't move beyond Tunisia and Egypt.
Gaddafi, though, seems ready to hang on until his last breath, promising a long-drawn war with the United States and its allies, whom he calls terrorists attacking a safe nation. This is breaking news from CNN Radio. In other news, radiation prompts Japan to ban the sale of raw milk and restrict the sale of vegetables. The restrictions apply to the Fukushima prefecture, where crews have begun to see success in cooling down nuclear reactors. WikiLeaks partially to blame. The U.S. ambassador to Mexico steps down this weekend. CNN's Matt Cherry has the details.
The source of that tension, cables released by WikiLeaks, including one quoting U.S. officials discussing widespread corruption in Mexican security agencies. Another cable shows the ambassador, Carlos Pasquel, criticizing the army's reluctance to act on U.S. intelligence about a cartel leader. Those comments angered Mexico's president, Felipe Calderon. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton says Pasquale's resignation is based on his desire to avoid being a distraction. Matt Cherry, CNN.
Looking ahead to the week, investors will again focus their attention on the crises in Libya and Japan. Stocks took a beating last week. For news anytime, go to CNN.com. This is CNN Radio.
Honey, what are you doing on the floor?
Lying on Spine Doc.
Spine who?
Spine Doc. It helps relieve back pain.
You really will try anything.
True, but this feels really good.
How does it work?
It stretches and relaxes your entire back while you rest on it.
Great, as long as it has a money-back guarantee.
Ha ha. Come on, try it.
Fine, but with my achy back, it won't do anything except... Ah,
I thought so.
This is comfortable. My entire back is supported, and what a nice stretch.
Yeah, it relaxes your neck and shoulders, too.
I can tell.
Just 5 to 10 minutes a day is all it takes.
Okay. I want one.
Good, because this is actually a present for you.
Aww.
If your back or neck is in pain from long hours hunched over the computer, sports, or life in general, order Spine Doc and get relief. The first 100 orders will get a free upgrade to our deluxe system and free shipping. That's a savings of over 25%. Visit NoPain2011.com to learn more. That's NoPain2011.com. Or call 800-253-3744. That's 800-253-3744.
This is a paid commercial program and may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Get ready for Foodie and the Beast with Nikki and David Nellis. A foodie born and bred, Nikki loves dining out, chatting up chefs, and insider industry buzz. David thinks a great meal is a good burger, a frosty brew, and a check for under 20 bucks. Foodie married Beast. And now they have the Food and Wine Variety Show that has everyone talking. From famous chefs, winemakers, and brewmasters to authors, farmers, and restaurant critics. It's Foodie and the Beast, and it's on now.
I'd like to be...
What?
This isn't what we were expecting.
Oh, I know. It's octopus. Sushi. And
very good, Andy.
I love the Beatles.
I like it.
All right. So welcome to Foodie and the Beast again with David and Nikki Nellis. We have a lot of seafood that we're staring at today.
Lots of food.
Who doesn't love Peruvian food? I do. Mm-hmm. So, you'll want to know that Wednesday, March 23rd, the cuisine of the Republic of Peru will be recognized with the Organization of American States Cultural Heritage of the Americas Award, and we've got some real celebs in today to talk about it. In with us to talk about the event, our Ambassador Hugo de Zela, who's the permanent representative of Peru to the OAS, and Peru's real top chefs, no kidding, brothers Felipe and Coque Osio. Gentlemen, welcome.
We're so glad to have you. Now, when you think Whole Foods and sushi, I know a lot of people get their sushi there. What you're really thinking of is Genji. They are the provider of fresh and natural sushi to all the Whole Foods in not just the D.C. area, but all the Whole Foods around the country. But did you know that they are also the biggest supporters of eating sushi sustainably? So we are going to talk to Ken Blankman, and he's going to tell us how we can make that a reality in all of our lives. Also later in the show, we'll be talking with Richard Hetzler. He is with the Mitzitum. Did I say it right?
Mitzitum.
Mitzitum. It's the Native American Cafe over at the Museum of the American Indian. And he's going to talk about all the research he had to do to create the menu at that fantastic cafe. So we'll be talking to him in just a bit.
And winemaker Howard O'Brien, who is the proprietor of Chateau O'Brien in Markham, Virginia. And Courtney Kissel, who's the executive director of the Reading Connection, are with us to talk fine Chateau O'Brien wines and how that dovetails with the March 25th 7th Annual Wine and Words Fundraiser that benefits the Reading Connection. Howard, let's start with you. I have to say, when I say Chateau O'Brien is a great name for a vineyard, I want to say it sounds like Chaim's Ethiopian restaurant, but the Irish sound of the name belies some amazingly, not amazingly delicious, but successful wines. Tell us how you got started in the wine business, because I know you're out of Manhattan somewhere.
You're from New York.
Yeah. My biggest business before I got into this, and world changes drastically, you just don't know, but I used to produce trade shows throughout the world, and that's how I kind of know Courtney as well. And I'm kind of a health nut, so I figure if I'm going to entertain every night, I'm going to drink a lot of wine. And then I got collecting wine and throughout the world, and you know, years ago, worldwide cell phones and stuff weren't around, so I fly overseas for an hour meeting. I can't just turn around and come back, so I really got into it. And I'm an entrepreneur by challenge, so living in Northern Virginia for a period of time, I saw the opportunities and took the thing. I never want to apologize for doing anything, and I'm not for the vineyard and winery. It's gone unbelievably well. So that's how I got started and wanted to leave a legacy to my family and friends.
How old is the vineyard?
I started 12 years ago, but I opened up 5 years ago. I'm a little different than a lot of wineries, and that's the difference and uniqueness of us, not only in Virginia. I only grow my own grapes. I have two other vineyards in Virginia in addition to here. I don't buy or sell grapes because we use very low yields, only 1 to 3 tons per acre. We're really big into biodynamics and organic. We're not certified, but we practice tremendous amounts of sustainability practices.
So you do
practices.
Voodoo? You do voodoo?
We do a lot of different things. In fact, I'm researching miniature sheep to be our little lawnmowers. We would use pigs traditionally because they don't eat up. They eat down, but sheep, we got to get miniature ones, and we found one in the southern part to come in, but we'll see what we do. But it's been fun and rewarding. The hardest business I've built, but it's been the most rewarding, so it's been great.
So tell us a little bit. You're going to pour some wine for us. Tell us a little bit about the first wine you're going to pour.
Yeah, I'm going to do about 4 different wines today. We're known for reds, and we find reds grow a lot of bit better, more of the Bordeaux-style grapes. We also have a few that aren't grown in any other parts of the world other than Uruguay and the Mandarin region, and only grown in Virginia and the United States is a grape called Tannat, and that was claimed the best, and that's why we went to Uruguay not too long ago. We have a North Point Red, which is more of our Bordeaux style. It is the 5 grapes grown in Bordeaux, and it's aged for a long time. Very low yields, only 1 to 2 tons per acre, and we age them for a while. I have an 05 Chardonnay, which is a Dijon clone from the Burgundy region, so it's very fruit-driven. Not a lot of butter and oak, even though it's only in French oak barrels. And then I have a crazy apple wine because I'm near two local apple orchards, and they've owned it for over 200 years, so I did an apple wine that we'll try, and I know Courtney loves that. I personally don't, but I absolutely sell tons of it.
Okay. All right, so which one are you going to pour first?
I'm going to go with the 05 Chardonnay. I like to start with whites first.
Okay, terrific. All right, well, while he's pouring that,
I'm going to introduce our guests again. We're going to start talking a little Peruvian cuisine. And I have to say, radio is the theater of the mind, so I want our guests to be understood by the audience. The Ambassador De Zela, is this distinguished urbane-looking gentleman. Uh-huh. And the two chefs, Osio... Felipe has this gorgeous shock of white hair that I want. And Koki.
We'll be talking about that later, just so you know.
Yeah, we're going to shave you before you leave. And Koki has a suntan that nobody else in Washington. What's the matter with you guys? You're making me feel insignificant. So, Mr. Ambassador, let's start with you. Peruvian cuisine will be in the limelight at the big gala at the OAS on the 23rd. It's all part of your celebration of the Inter-American Year of Culture. Tell us what's going on. Tell us about the celebration and the event.
Yes, I will. Let's see. This is the Inter-American Year of Culture. So at the OES, we decided to create an award to distinguish the most important cultural expressions of each of member countries. And we decided to begin with Peru, for which we are glad. We want Washington to be part of the new trend of gastronomy in the world. Mm-hmm. So we are bringing to you the Peruvian food. That's the whole idea. And this is a ceremony that is going to be held on Wednesday at the OAS.
Mm-hmm.
And we are going to have very important people of Washington
well,
to
we'll
witness
be there.
That.
So, yes. We will have very will important people.
You know, only for you, only for you will I actually put on a tie.
You look very well in the tie. Don't worry.
He flatters.
Yeah, you flatter too much. Okay.
Well, chefs, I have to ask you, we want to thank you both for coming in today. Few families can boast one famous chef, two famous chefs. I mean, you have three famous chefs in your families. I mean, how did you all get into cooking?
Mama?
Yeah.
Because of Mama, of course. She's a great chef in Peru and a not only a traditional one, but maybe the first one to internationalize Peruvian food.
Mm-hmm.
And then I start work. Actually, I'm an economist.
Okay.
But 25 years ago, I decided to work with her, and I stayed in the kitchen till now. Mm-hmm. And Coque, my brother, he is a real chef.
What's the difference? Why do you say that? What's the difference?
I mean, he has studied here and the CIA.
Yeah, he went to CIA and all of that. Yeah.
So,
well, let me ask a question about your mother, Marissa, because she's described in a lot of literature that we read as the Martha Stewart of Peruvian cooking. How did she get started? Did she start in the kitchen or was she a professional chef?
No, she started here, actually. She lived in San Francisco, mm-hmm. where I was born. And when I was a little kid, she started cooking with her other friends. Actually, a friend of her from Armenia was the first one. Really? To put her in the kitchen.
Huh.
And then when she got back to Peru, she divorced our father and she started working just to sustain the family. So, and cooking was
the way to do it.
Well, she did okay.
Yeah.
So now, how would she, like, what would she describe her cuisine? Does she take lots of different influences? I mean, what is the basis of Peruvian cuisine today?
Well, Peruvian cuisine actually is a mixture of the traditional food in Peru before the Spaniards
mm-hmm.
conquered mm-hmm. The Inca Empire. And with their techniques, the food began to evolve, the evolution to what we have now.
Mm-hmm.
But now we have a Chinese very big influence.
Chifa, right?
Yeah,
Chifa?
Very, very big. Mm-hmm. Because we have the biggest Chinese colony in outside San Francisco.
Well, something I learned is that the Chinese immigrants that came to Peru in the 19th century are the ones that brought rice.
Yeah, that's
right?
it. Yeah, I mean, really.
Who knew?
And rice now, it's
a staple,
our
right?
Main, yeah.
Isn't that amazing?
But when you talk about this, Coque, you went to CIA, you actually worked with, I have it here, Eric Repair and a couple of other chefs, and then you were in Europe. So, obviously, those influences have to be influencing the already sort of blended cuisine and culture that you're representing. So what did you bring from all those experiences?
Yeah, there's a group of friends of mine, that a generation of young chefs that mm-hmm. we traveled, you know, mm-hmm. and then we came back and we started working with Peruvian food, but changing, you know, the presentations and refining some things,
mm-hmm.
keeping obviously the flavor and the traditional way to make things, but
well, I was going to say, John George and Eric Repair have both been guests on this show, and they're very strong personalities, so there must be a lot of them in what you're bringing to the table now in your place.
Yes, what we try is to keep, you know, the tradition and the flavors, but mm-hmm. we try to refine presentations, use better ingredients, and now that's going in all the country in Peru.
Well, I wanted to ask both of you, I mean, do you think working with working outside of Peru and then coming back in, things like sustainability, local sourcing, things of that nature, is that more apparent today? Are those things that you as chefs are working on in Peru?
Yes, the idea is to make all these efforts to make Peruvian food more popular is to help, you know, people that works to make possible, like
mm-hmm.
the farmers and the, you know, so that's very important. We're trying to make these people really develop with the
Mm-hmm. Right. So tell us about what you brought in today.
We make ceviche today. Ceviche is the most popular Peruvian dish.
Mm-hmm.
It's very simple, but it's basically the freshness of the products is the key in this dish. No, it's only fish, lime, chilies, onions, and salt.
But there's two different kinds of corn here with it, right?
That's the garnish.
The accent, the garnish. Well, let's talk about the garnish, because the garnish looks delicious. So tell us about, I've never seen corn kernels so big.
This is the choclo, what we call the, our corn is choclo, and it's a white corn. It's huge, no? You can see
the kernels are enormous.
And then the other one, the dried one, is cancha, which is another kind of corn, which is toasted. It's our popcorn. That's the way we look at it.
So would this be considered a very classic dish?
This is very classic. This is popular. In Peru, you have ceviche all over the country. In the coastline, in the Andes, in the Amazon jungle. It changes the fish or the seafood, but basically it's the same recipe.
Do you have a preferred fish, both of you, that you would prefer with ceviche, or does it change every day? What's available?
Whatever is fresh, you know, it's good. But in Peru, lenguado, which is like a sole or a Hollywood kind of, and cibas, which is a corvina for us, no?
Sure. What?
Well, I just want to talk, bring up something else, because you're very active in the whole sustainability movement. And actually, later on, we're going to be talking about sustainability in a different area, and that's sushi. But essentially, this is sushi. Ceviche is, you know, raw fish. So how did you get involved in that? And I mean, what are, I mean, we're sort of fishing out the oceans between the camarones and the and everything else, right? We're going to run out of fish and shellfish pretty soon if we're not careful. So is your movement based around farming some of these endangered resources or what?
Actually, what we started has been revalorating the proud of being a cook in Peru. Usually, it was a job that people never valorated. And they thought that they had to cook just to for a living. But now we have been working in making people proud of their work, buying the best products. And afterwards, that was our first step. And now we are convincing them not to buy whatever is endangered. So we have started with baby octopus and with camarones, which are our river shrimps.
And how has the public's response been? I mean, are people listening?
Great. Actually, the government has made this kind of provisions before, with never with success, because actually restaurants bought the products. Now we are starting not too bad.
You're taking the lead.
Yeah.
Excellent. All right, we have to take a quick break. We will be right back.
To pay for the show.
Right? This is David and Nikki Nellis with Foodie and the Beast. When we come back, we're going to be talking more Peruvian cuisine and sipping some more wine. We'll be back in just a sec.
Rise and shine with Founding Farmers. Choose from farm fresh eggs, blueberry buckwheat pancakes, stuffed French toast, waffles made to order, an amazing array of side orders like thick cut bacon, fresh grilled sausage, yogurt parfaits, and house-made jams and jellies with Intelligentsia coffees, tea salon teas, fresh hand squeezed juices, and eye-opening libations. You've got a real breakfast. Founding Farmers, 1924 Pennsylvania Avenue Northwest. Open weekdays from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. for breakfast. See the menus and make reservations directly at wearefoundingfarmers.com.
Since 1886, the Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington, D.C. has been helping children in D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. Now they are visited by over 3,000 children every day. The club teaches character and leadership development and arts education. No child is turned away for being unable to pay the $25 fee, and the club needs your help to make this happen. Give a gift online at bgcgw.org. The life you lift up today will be the life that brings a better world tomorrow. This message is brought to you by GEICO and Federal News Radio.
If you're a woman and you're sick and tired of watching your hair get thinner and thinner, we're about to challenge everything you think you know about hair loss. Because we're going to send you a risk-free trial of a product with an FDA-approved ingredient, clinically proven to help stop women's hair loss and regrow hair. It's called Keranique. Find out how you can try it risk-free by calling 1-800-600-0209 in the next 10 minutes. You're going to be amazed by what you see, because Keranique is formulated especially for women to help repair hair follicles, prevent premature hair loss, and regrow thicker, fuller hair. And it's sulfate-free, which means it's safe for color-treated hair. Ladies, it's finally your turn to be free from embarrassing hair loss. Call 1-800-600-0209 in the next 10 minutes and try Keranique before you buy it. But hurry, supplies are extremely limited. For your risk-free trial, call 1-800-600-0209. That number again is 1-800-600-0209.
I'd rather be a sparrow than a snake.
What? You don't know it's Peruvian? Shame on you.
No, I'm, I don't know. I'm not a big Artie Garfunkel.
That's like the biggest Peruvian song in the world now.
Okay, all right. Yeah. Back, you're back on Foodie and the Beast. With Dave and Nikki Nellis, and we're talking all about some
we're
great Peruvian cuisine.
We're stuffing our faces with ceviche. It's delicious.
Ambassador DeZela, I want to make sure that we sort of get this in, because I'm betting, you know, Lima's been now described as sort of the Paris of South America. Has the surge in the popularity of Peruvian cuisine equaled the same kind of surge in tourism in the country?
Absolutely. We have a lot of Parisians going to Lima to eat. So we are beginning to get better.
That's
every
a long
day.
Drive.
But it's worth it. You should try it.
We'll get in our car right now.
Okay, definitely.
And chefs, let's talk a little bit about the street food of Peru, because I think we hear a lot about it. And street food here in the States is sort of just getting big with these food carts and food trucks that are, especially in D.C., but even nationally, New York City, L.A., like it's just starting here. But Peruvian street food has been known for a long time, and now it's sort of coming into the restaurants. Tell us, like, how you bring that to your plates.
Yeah, there's many street food, like the anticuchos or, you know, picarones, which now are in the menus of the very fancy restaurants. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you just, you know, keeping the, as we talked before, keeping the recipe, the traditional one, just present it in a better way or stuff it with something different. So it's something that's going on for a while. Mm-hmm. It's street food in the fancy restaurants.
And you guys also were just a part of Madrid Fusion, is that correct?
Yeah. I went to Madrid Fusion.
How much fun was that?
It was amazing.
Was it just incredible? Can you tell? We just have a few minutes. Can you just tell us a little bit about it?
We had to serve this lunch for 1,200 people.
Small group.
And it was, actually it was the best opportunity for Peruvian food, because we had chefs from all around the world, cooks that were going to try our products, and that way, what we want is not to sell Peruvian food to the world, because that's a job for Peruvians. Mm-hmm. We want the Peruvian products and our techniques to be used in international restaurants.
Sure.
So if we can have a little Peruvian fusion in a French restaurant, it's great. Well, Rupert has something.
Well, sure. Restaurants. Right. Well, no, with Ferran no, Adria, you know, place. I would assume that that's something that you would, there's
that's
so much to
want.
Learn there.
We need to influence other countries with our
I think that's happening.
Right.
All right. Well, chefs, we want to, first of all, offer sort of general congratulations to the cuisine of Peru for winning the OAS Cultural Heritage of the Americas Award. And chefs, thank you for joining us, Mr. Ambassador. The ambassador has invited us to move into his home with our dogs and kids so that we can eat Peruvian food all the time. And I want to thank you. That's awfully nice considering we just met.
Will be my pleasure.
What do you do with people you've known for a week? That's what I want to know.
I can tell that on radio.
That's a different show. Yeah, you're right. This is a family show. Well, chefs, thank you very much. And Nick, why don't you take us back to Howard and Courtney?
All right. So, Courtney, we didn't get to talk to you at the beginning of the show. You are the executive director of the Reading Connection. It's the beneficiary of the Wine and Words fundraiser. Tell us quickly a little bit about the organization.
Absolutely. We are a literacy nonprofit here in the region. We are over in Arlington. Our goal is that every child that we reach, which are children in homeless shelters and transitional housing in the area, will be a regular and passionate reader.
Fantastic. And so tell us about this event going on the
25th. It is on the 25th. It's
and
on
it
Friday.
Is, it is open to the public.
It is, and tickets are $75 and are available on our website. It is our 7th annual of Wine and Words. And we've been working with Chateau O'Brien for the second year to provide a wine tasting to our guests, as well as having restaurants from around the area come and provide food for our guests as well.
All right. Well, when we come back with you, I want to hear more about the restaurants who are participating. But I want to bring Chateau O'Brien back to the mic. So this Charnay went just beautifully with the ceviche.
Yeah, it was a good start with it, I could tell.
Huh?
Yeah, I saw the reviews are pretty good. Yeah,
I'm seeing exports.
I'm seeing exports to Peru. I do have more. I do have more if you need some.
So tell us what we're going with next.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go with the North Point Red. It's our Bordeaux style Cab Franc, Cab Sauv, Petit Verdot Malbec, and a little bit of Merlot. Very, very smooth. This is the style of wine I like to drink. Over 2 years in a French oak barrel. I think we're going to have to probably dump out a little bit of the white wine.
Okay, well, we can do that. Here, can you put this in front of you? All right, it is time to bring on our next guest. We have Ken Blakeman on the phone, who is the marketing director from Genji Sushi. Ken, are you there?
Good morning, guys.
Hi, how are you today?
Very well. I guess the party's already gotten started.
Yeah, well, it has, and we've got a tray of your sushi in front of us that's a...
Right, we started with
I just
ceviche.
Want you to know, Ken, you're invited to be a guest every week.
You should have seen the ambassador's eyes when I pulled out the tray of sushi.
Let's get this
glorious.
We've got our chefs here. So, Ken, let's start off from sort of the back end of this. We eat your sushi all the time because we're at Whole Foods all the time.
Not a lot.
But we understand that you're going to be doing a lot at the Cherry Blossom Festival, and we want to make sure the Cherry Blossom Festival starts on the 26th, and we just want to make sure that everybody knows right off the bat what Genji is doing there.
Thank you very much. Yeah, absolutely. Similar to what your guest from Peru just mentioned, we're going to be putting on, we're going to be co-sponsoring with the National Geographic an event for sustainable sushi tasting, and that is going to be next Wednesday, the 30th. From 7 to 9 at National Geographic. There, it's going to be about 300 guests, so a small piece of cake compared to what went on in Spain.
Right.
That's going to be guests pay $100. The funds go to the Cherry Blossom Festival. And we're highlighting sustainability. We want people to really think about it when they choose sushi items. There are certain items that... you know, obviously are being overfished, and we want customers to know about that and to expand the variety of what they normally eat.
Well, I have to ask you, I mean, as a sushi eater, and we do try to, you know, in our house, stay sustainable with whether it's, you know, the veggies or the meats or whatever we bring into our house. But isn't it hard with the sushi community? I mean, everybody wants ahi tuna. I mean, how do we train our palates to eat to go that way, and who can help us with that?
You're absolutely right. One of the keynote speaker for this event is going to be Catherine Trenner, and he literally wrote the book on sustainability. I highly recommend his book. That's a helpful guide. It's a guide to saving the oceans one bite at a time.
Okay.
That has pictures. It tells you, you know, because sometimes the same fish, depending on where it comes from, is good or bad in terms of whether it's on the red list or on the green list. For example, albacore tuna, which is U.S. when it's U.S. fished, is on the good list. It's a good alternative, and that is what we have at Genji. Whereas when it's imported, it's not considered
sustainable.
Exactly. So it's important to know where your fish comes from. The Monterey Bay organization, they have on their website a sustainable guide to sushi, which everyone can download, and that's a good guide as well. I guess a rule of thumb is the four S's, which Catherine mentions as well, is one is seasonality. Look for items that are in season. Small fish, again, the larger the fish is, less, obviously it takes longer to grow. It potentially is accumulating more mercury. So if you stay with small fish, they tend to reach maturity quickly and reproduce quickly, which is good for sustainability. Silver fish, again, those tend to be, at least in the American market, less overfished. And then shellfish is something that is underlooked.
Well, Ken, I've got a question. In general, for the layperson, I mean, how do we know what the hell the fishermen, I mean, how do they know what they're catching? I know there's sonar and they can see where there's schools of fish, and obviously you get a bigger blip off the, you know, the predator fish like tuna. But, I mean, in the end, once it's in the net and up on the boat, it's whatever it is, isn't it?
You're right. And that's why it's important to choose vendors and vet vendors who do not necessarily just use nets, those big purse sends, which catch everything but the kitchen sink. And then the bycatch is tremendous, which is a big tragedy in the industry. So to get vendors who are responsible and who use pole and troll. Pole is literally... the old-fashioned, put fishermen on a boat, and they go after a school of fish, and they catch only that species.
So, I mean, I guess, you know, it's almost like with fish, you should be the same way you are when you go shopping for meat. You should look for pasture-raised and humanely treated. So are we looking for the same thing now when it comes to buying our seafood and purchasing sushi or ordering sushi?
Yeah, exactly. It's about becoming more informed.
Mm-hmm.
We did a recent study, we asked our customers what are the most important factors in selecting sushi, and first and foremost, of course, is freshness and safety. It is a high-risk food for obvious reasons.
Right.
And second of all is information and transparency. So that speaks to your point. We've got to become better educated. And third, I'm glad to see, is sustainability.
Well, so this is going to sound like a naive question, but when people go to their Whole Foods and order sushi from Genji Sushi, you guys are already serving strictly sustainable seafood?
It's currently about 70% of our product mix is considered sustainable.
Mm-hmm.
It is all 100% natural, and it's 100% responsibly farmed throughout the world. But we're in a process, basically, of turning over our product mix, finding vendors who are more advanced, who are going the extra mile,
mm-hmm.
To prove that they are catching it in the proper way, the farmers, to make sure that they're not using pesticides and antibiotics, and they're doing everything naturally.
Well, Ken, here's a question. We've got about a minute before we have to take a break, but there's certain of these fish that can't be farmed, right? I mean, you can't farm tuna, really, can you?
Yeah, that's correct.
So they've got to be...
They have to be caught wild.
So if Genji's fishermen are being responsible, what do we do about the rest of the... This is a question for you to answer in 40 seconds.
40 seconds or less,
Ken. But, I mean, how do we... You know, it's almost like yelling at the ocean to stop the waves. It's one or two very responsible resources, and then the rest of the world is just catching and gobbling.
Right. So you got to find the ones that are on the top of the good list and start with those.
Mm-hmm.
And as customers buy more of those, then the message is obvious, and we move... all of our production in that direction.
Got it.
Well, Ken, we have to take a quick break, but I'd mm-hmm. love it if you stayed on the phone because I want to talk about how you train your chefs.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to take a quick break. This is David and Nikki Nellis with Foodie and the Beast. We're going to talk more sustainable sushi and some more wines. We'll be right back.
Could switching to GEICO really save you 15% or more on car insurance? Does a rolling stone gather no moss? No moss. You're gonna have to trust me on this one.
Switch to GEICO now and you could save hundreds on your car insurance. For a free rate quote, visit geico.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO. 15 minutes could save you 15%.
Farmers and Fishers in Georgetown, the perfect place for your upcoming celebration. Whether it's a luncheon or after-work gathering, cocktail reception, sit-down dinner, or full-scale party, Farmers and Fishers can accommodate you and your guests. Whether your group is 30 or 300, Farmers and Fishers has the right setting for your party. They'll customize a menu and beverage package to suit your taste, plus there are no room rental fees and low package minimums. Contact Lila Dugley for more info or get details at farmersandfishers.com about booking your event.
Cellist Yo-Yo Ma, one of the great stars of classical music, enthralls audiences all over the world with his passion and artistry. When it comes to picking a cello, he tends toward Italian instruments made in the 18th century. When it comes to a timepiece, however, he favors an instrument crafted in Switzerland, the Rolex Datejust. Since Rolex introduced the first self-winding calendar wristwatch in 1945, the Datejust has become one of the most sought-after models in the Oyster line. With its classic Oyster design and magnified date window, the Datejust is every bit as distinctive as the master cellist who wears it. To see the Datejust and a complete selection of other Rolex timepieces, visit your official Rolex jeweler.
See what a new watch can say about you at Torno, the world's largest watch store. Torno, the fashion center at Pentagon City, Arlington.
I got a fish in my dish.
Oh, my goodness. These are some good choices. All right, you're back on Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. And we're talking Genji Sushi. Ken, are you still there?
Ken?
Uh-oh. Ken, are you still there?
Andy, we lost Ken.
Ken.
Speaking, hello?
There we are. Good.
Are.
Okay, mm-hmm. Ken Blakeman. We thought we lost you there. Ken, tell us, when we go into Whole Foods, the sushi chefs there are amazing because they're, you know, I'm surprised they don't start a fire with those knives. But do you guys, we were just sort of wondering, do you hire people and train them, or do you only take in experienced sushi chefs who know what they're doing already?
We do both. The majority of our employees come in with a very basic level, and we sort of have like a karate system of different belt colors. So they start off with a white belt, and then they have to work their way up to a black belt. The sushi you have in front of you today was made by Chef Lee and Chef Nguyen from Friendship Heights.
Mm-hmm.
And, they're black belts.
They're black belts.
I'm wearing a black belt today as well.
So can you tell us about some of the sushi that we're eating today? I know they sent you a picture of what we're having. Can you tell us about some of it? And is any of it sort of something that people wouldn't normally order because the fish is new, or you're trying to sort of push so that people will take sustainability more seriously?
One thing I'm seeing is mango on here, I think.
Yeah, that's right.
Wow.
We definitely want customers to also realize, you know, like you mentioned before, Nikki, I think vegetable sushi is a good way to go sustainable.
Mm-hmm.
We use local vegetables, and then in this case, mango is not local, but it is a fruit, and, you know, that replaces some of the other fish that you might have had. I think you have a good amount of salmon, mm-hmm. which is responsibly farmed in Norway.
Okay.
You have albacore tuna, some of our new items there, and our shrimp as well, which is responsibly farmed. The albacore in particular is something I'd like you to try. The doubled seared albacore with the little masago on top, the orange.
I'm eating it right now.
What do you think?
It's delicious.
That's
awesome. Really is. And I think when people think albacore, they think, you know, tuna in a can. I mean, they have no, they can't differentiate.
What I think is amazing is if I had sushi in my mouth, I wouldn't be able to speak clearly. You're doing a great job.
I am
a mother. I multitask.
Extremely impressed.
Radio, right?
You should see what else I can do at the same time. No, it's really delicious. And are you trying to introduce albacore as a replacement for ahi?
We want to basically get people to expand the variety of fish that they have. So mm-hmm. definitely that is one of the options.
Well, you need to know that the biggest, while my wife and I love sushi, our kids, we have a 10-year-old and an 8-year-old who make a beeline for the sushi counter every time
friends.
We get to Whole Foods.
What do they go for? What are their favorites?
You know, one is a big salmon guy, and our daughter, for whatever reason, doesn't like avocado, so it's anything that doesn't have avocado in it.
No, but they're terrific. The people at the we go to all the different Whole Foods in the area, but they're very accommodating and they're terrific with the children, and they always make them fresh for them. It's
they'll make custom rolls. If she just wants, you know, cucumber and whatever, they'll do it. It's great.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I have one last question. It's not about sustainability before we wrap up, but a lot of the local sushi restaurants are now doing sushi without rice, like rolls without rice, and they're using sort of the soy sheets
mm-hmm.
to create the crisps. Is that something that you're finding customers are asking?
Yeah, we introduced Snackers last year, and they're coming back.
Mm-hmm.
In July and August, we're going to be doing a big Hawaiian promotion, and with the winning a trip to Hawaii, and that's going to involve soy sheets.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've just introduced a miso garden roll, which I don't think is on your platter today.
Okay.
But that is low sodium, low fat, no rice. Very nutritious.
Excellent.
Well, Ken, I just want you to know we honeymooned in Hawaii,
and we're signing up for that contest.
You're the favorite guest I've ever had on the phone. I just want you to know that. Don't want to influence you in any way.
All right, Kev. Well, we want to thank you so much for joining us. Will you just give a big shout out to what you're doing again when you come here next week?
With pleasure. Absolutely. Yes. The Sustainable Sushi Tasting Event is the 30th of March,
mm-hmm.
and I would say go to the NationalCherryBlossomFestival.org. to check it out. The menu's up there and all the details.
Excellent. Great. Ken, thanks so much for joining us today.
All right, but let's go back over to Howard and Courtney. Courtney, you're with the Reading Connection. Tell us who started this. Who decided that we need help with reading, aside from Mrs. Bush way back when, and how the organization got started?
Absolutely. By an absolutely amazing founder by the name of Beth Reese.
Mm-hmm.
Beth Reese was a school teacher at the time and noticed that kids in the classroom who were living in homeless shelters were behind with their reading level. And with the research based that reading aloud will help with literacy development and language development, started our signature Read Aloud program.
Okay. So now, tell us just a tiny bit quickly about the event and how the money raised helps out. How does it all work?
Sure. This is, as I mentioned, our 7th annual of Wine and Words event. Mm-hmm. We have a silent auction, a wine tasting, mm-hmm. and food from around the area. And we're delighted that we had corporate support raised enough that all of the money raised the night of for the silent auction mm-hmm. will go directly to support our literacy programs.
Okay, there is so much food in the studio right now.
We're moving sushi
Do
around.
Do you want to start another charity?
To make room for the Native Americans. All right, and Howard, you've got a bunch of wines over there. What are you pouring next?
Well, I think I'm going to go with, right now it's the only one in the world. It's a late harvest Tannat, not fortified, but 18% alcohol. It's a port style. This was my fastest selling wine as in the National Red Grape of Uruguay. That's why we went down there.
Why is it the only one in the world?
Because Tannat is really only grown in Virginia and United States. Very few people do it. But the National Red Grape of Uruguay is, and that's where I got the idea. They do a port style, but it's fortified with brandy. We didn't because, and you can't do this if you don't grow your own grapes. We just let the grapes hang on for the brick level, residual sugar to convert to alcohol to 36, 37%. No one's really going to try that on the East Coast. Maybe not around the lake for ice wines, and it did it. That's why it took so long to have the federal government approve the label because they approve them all. Uniquely different.
I was trying to figure out whose delivery you reminded me of. He sounds just like your dad. Couple of New Yorkers.
Maybe that's
He's
a good thing.
He's not from New York. He's from Philadelphia.
Well, same thing.
No, I'm not. I wouldn't want to be from. I'm sorry. I like Philadelphia. I'm just kidding. No, I do like your comment. Just yell at the ocean to stop the waves. I got to use that. Man. I got a lot of those
you know what?
People. I can
just
tell
sign on to advertise for 6 months. You can use it for free.
All right, thanks,
my good friend.
Buy a lot of my wine, and we'll be even.
All right, so now we're going
to
switch over completely.
Come to the mic.
Yeah, let's get.
I can't believe how much food you brought with you. Oh my God!
All right,
we have to bring a showing for you.
Let's tell people what chef we're speaking with, Nikki.
Sorry, okay.
It's Chef Richard Hetzler of Mitziam Cafe in the Museum of the American Indian. And you guys, I mean, you have to have one of the most unique menus in the country.
Right.
Because it's all Native American foods, and we're looking at a bunch, and we're going to talk about them. But I got to know, give us a little background on you and the path that you followed to end up at the museum.
Well, we've kind of coined the expression that it's not museum food anymore, and that's kind of the big thing. With what we try to do. My background is, classic French American trained. Mm-hmm. I was, in full service a la carte restaurants for many years and then converted over to the dark side of cooking, to the business and industry side of things or the performing arts centers.
So do you have a Death Star too?
Yes.
Cool.
But what we do, or my background then coming into it was, I was the executive chef with Restaurant Associates at Natural History. We used that as a test kitchen once we were awarded the contract for the National Museum of the American Indian. So we brought in Native Americans. We did 5 focus groups and then kind of just started, menu development, sourcing, anything that had to do with Native American foods, where we could get it, what we could do with it, and then did 5 focus groups with the different Native Americans from the different mm-hmm. regions to bring that together to what we have today.
Well, let's back up a little bit. You and I were talking off air. I mean, you can't just say Native American cuisine because it involves so many different tribes. So how did you guys sort of figure out how you would stay focused? How did you figure out which regions you would attack?
The museum had already had done some legwork before we came on, and they'd already defined the 5 regions. The 5 regions were South America, Mesoamerica, and then basically all of North America, Northern Woodlands, Northwest Coast, and then Great Plains.
Okay.
So basically we had kind of a framework to work around, mm-hmm. but even now we've grown into Native Americans that aren't representative. So there's not a lot of Native American communities from the Southeast that were represented, from Florida, in those regions.
Seminoles.
Exactly. So we actually bring in and we do a lot of different festivals. Hawaii is a big one for us.
Mm-hmm.
We do a chocolate festival to really, with South America and the chocolate and choclo.
That was in February. You just did that, right?
Exactly.
Well, let me ask a question that just occurred to me, because a lot of, a lot of issues with the tribes, like the Cheyenne were forcibly removed from, their native hunting grounds down to Oklahoma.
All the tribes were, eventually.
So did that dramatically change what their cuisine? I think it would have changed their cuisine. Well,
yeah, I think if you look at it in the succession of history, basically, a lot of what happened after that was, Native Americans were then moved to the reservations. Once they were put on reservations, the commodity foods came in.
Yeah.
So that's where fry bread came from. Fry bread is a birth of the commodity foods, the lard, the flour, the sugar. And, it's very controversial in Native American society because hence started the obesity and a lot of the problems that Native Americans feel. Now, it was something that the museum wanted to feature because if any powwow you go to, they're you're going to have fry bread.
Of course.
So, right. Of course, we serve a ton of fry bread.
Well, let me also ask you, I mean, looking through the cookbook, which was released in 2010, mm-hmm. a lot of the recipes seem very Latin American or, you know, what we would think of as Mexican cuisine with mm-hmm. the tamales and the tacos. So is that food that just traveled? How... Explain it a little bit.
Well, actually, those are foods that have their origin in Native Americans, the Incans, the Mayans. Those were the people that really invented what corn was. If you think about what corn is today and what corn was, it's nothing like it. Corn actually started from a grass, and they actually produced this into be what we know as corn today. And, of course, it's kind of been plagiarized a little bit in between. But, right. you know, choclo is a very good, you know, version of what original corn was. It was a very dense, very dry corn.
I mean, it's so different.
Right.
There's
a lot more different
with.
Flavor into it and everything else. So there's a lot of those things mm-hmm. that go into it. And then you go into the history of where chilies came from, where tomatoes came from, and where all these ingredients that have kind of traveled across the world, and they have their origins with Native Americans. Native Americans were the first to really cultivate them and really get them to what we
Didn't
know.
Didn't Europeans used to think that tomatoes were poison?
Yes, and well, did. And you could talk lobsters as a prime example. When the European settlers came, they wouldn't eat lobster because they saw them as just this ugly thing.
Big spider.
Native Americans were the first to teach them how to cook and eat the crustaceans. The clam bake has Native Americans. Virginia salt cured ham, you know, the Virginia ham that everybody refers to has its origins in Native American cuisines. They were the ones to teach the settlers how to salt cure the
how
ham.
How to cure their meat.
And now we know of it as Virginia ham, but it's really Native American ham.
So how surprised were you when you were doing your research by a lot of these things?
It was amazing. It was kind of like a culinary rebirth for me as a culinarian. I mean, like I said, French-American trained,
right.
worked in French-American restaurants, and then kind of go back through history and trace these foods and where they came from.
Oh. All right, we have to take a quick break. But when we come back, we want to find out more about the recipes in your cookbook, and I want to find out about all this food that you brought in today. This is David and Nikki Nellis with Foodie and the Beast. We'll be back in just a sec.
Public engagement starts with your website and now extends to mobile devices. If you are a federal program manager and would like to explore the topic of web interfaces, come to a free April breakfast forum brought to you by the Armature Corporation. Our speaker will be Tim McLaughlin, CEO of Siteworks, at AFEI headquarters near the Courthouse Metro, and you'll be out by 9 a.m., moderated by me, John Gilroy. For more details, go to AFEI.org.
Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
How can I keep my child healthy during flu season? My teenager's always online. How can I be sure he's not into something harmful? Parents Perspective has the answers. Sundays at 4 p.m. on WFED 1500 AM. Designate Parents Perspective 44415 with a generous donation in the combined federal campaign or online at www.parentsperspective.org. Thank you for helping Parents Perspective work for you.
If you're a woman and you're sick and tired of watching your hair get thinner and thinner, we're about to challenge everything you think you know about hair loss. Because we're going to send you a risk-free trial of a product with an FDA-approved ingredient, clinically proven to help stop women's hair loss and regrow hair. It's called Keranique. Find out how you can try it risk-free by calling 1-800-600-0209 in the next 10 minutes. You're going to be amazed by what you see. Because Keranique is formulated especially for women to help repair hair follicles, prevent premature hair loss, and regrow thicker, fuller hair. And it's sulfate-free, which means it's safe for color-treated hair. Ladies, it's finally your turn to be free from embarrassing hair loss. Call 1-800-600-0209 in the next 10 minutes and try Keranique before you buy it. But hurry, supplies are extremely limited. For your risk-free trial, call 1-800-600-0209. That number again is 1-800-600-0209.
Cherokee people!
I love Paul Revere Cherokee and the Raiders. Tribe. That's an old song. All right, you're back on Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. We're talking to Chef Richard Hetzler of Mitzi Tom Cafe in the Museum of the American Indian. I guess I screwed up the name last time.
I bet a lot of people screw it up, though, right?
It is. It's not an easy name to pronounce.
Yeah. And what does it mean?
It means let's eat in a native Delaware Piscataway language.
Who did the research on that?
That was something actually the museum did. They wanted to be able to feature it. And we really, in the museum itself, in the cafe, we don't do a lot of recognition of different tribes because there's so many out there that we couldn't be fair. Mm-hmm. This was the one. This is one of the really only pieces of the restaurant that has, you know, some ties into a different, a specific native tribe.
Mm. All right, well, I have food in my mouth.
Hold on. Wait, no, because you just keep chewing. I want to make sure.
About the tamales.
Stop.
Okay.
I want to make sure people know that there's a Mitzi Tom Cafe cookbook mm-hmm. that the chef authored from Fulcrum Press, right?
That's right.
And where can we find that? Because it's an awesome book.
It's available in the museum and in the cafes. It's also available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and everywhere else. And actually, just got back from Paris. We won through Gourmand International, second best cookbook in the world.
Congratulations. What
with
an
Gourmand
honor.
International.
And I read about that. There are only like 40 or so awards given for all the cookbooks produced all over the world each year, right?
Right. We're out of 40 countries. We came in the top four, and then we're second in the top four.
Look at you, chef.
Congratulations.
Who would have thunk it on
we
the
may have to move in with you
around.
After we leave the ambassador's house.
I'll have
we
to expand
like
a little
roving.
Bit.
We're roving. We're nomads.
Exactly.
So tell us, I mean, you brought in all this glorious food. Tell us a little bit about it, please.
Well, what we brought for you today was the wild rice salad. Wild rice salad is one of the most popular salads that we've ever done. It's been on the menu from the very beginning. Wild rice, dried cranberries. It has a very simple apple cider vinaigrette, some watercress in it for some color. Mm-hmm. We also brought you a pine nut. A prickly pear agave nectar aqua fresca. We do about four or five different aqua frescas, which are like flavored waters mm-hmm. using indigenous ingredients from the different regions. We brought you a couple different salsas. There's a pumpkin seed and citrus salsa. There's a green tomato salsa. With us changing our menu seasonally, we're really able to bring in the seasonality of the different items. So tomatoes really aren't in season full yet. So we have a cooked salsa casera, which is basically a cooked red salsa, mm-hmm. using some of the red tomatoes that really don't have the flavor by pureeing that with it. Mm-hmm. We have the green tomato salsa. We've got guacamole, of course. And then we brought in, off of our new spring menu, which actually rolls out today, so it's perfect timing.
Perfect timing.
We change
We're
our menu on each solstice. So every the first day of spring, our new spring menu rolls out. Mm-hmm. First day of summer, fall, and everything, and so on and so forth. We brought basically our pumpkin seed tamale. So this is a very traditional tamale. Mm-hmm. We mix the masa with some annatto. We make an annatto oil and then basically stuff it with pumpkin seeds and then serve it with the pumpkin seed salsa.
Wow.
What is the public's overall reaction to the cafe?
It's
been
phenomenal.
Because some of the food may be, it's a museum.
Right.
It's not like people are seeking out.
Well, it's probably the first destination restaurant in a museum in the country.
It is. We're the only, as far as I know, the only Zagat-rated cafe within the Smithsonian and most of the other museums, I know Washington, D.C.
Do you cater?
We do.
Oh, my.
Well, they're resident assistants,
Did
you see what he came in with? He was prepared.
That'd be awesome. All right. Well, Chef, let's make sure everybody knows we're talking about Mitzi Tom Cafe.
Mm-hmm.
I said it right. I get
Correct.
Points.
You do.
In the Museum of the American Indian downtown. It's a Smithsonian Museum. And Chef Richard Hetzler has not only brought fame and glory to the cafe, but he's written a great cookbook called the Mitzi Tom Cafe Cookbook, which has a lot of interesting sort of factoids in there, too. It's not just a recipe book. So check it out on Amazon. You can find it there. You can find it at the museum.
Chef, just before we have to say goodbye to you, tell us what some of the big events coming up are that you guys are working on.
Well, Cherry Blossom, of course. With Cherry Blossom and being on the mall, our Northern Woodlands menu kind of revolves around Cherry Blossom. So we have a mixed grill on the menu right now that we're mm-hmm. doing. And then we change up. Depending on how the museum works and funding, we do a lot of different cultural exhibitions. So, Hawaii, we do the Chocolate Festival. The next big one is going to be Living Earth coming up in August, September, mm-hmm. where it's going to basically be like a farmer's market. We're bringing in a bunch of different Native Americans from different communities. We have an outdoor farm we're growing, and we're going to actually utilize those. We're going to do a kind of an Iron Chef competition where we'll bring in local chefs and do a big competition around that. So that's
a lot
of fun.
Well, maybe we'll bring you back on
Definitely.
About that time so we can talk about that. The stuff you're growing in your farm, is that items that are indigenous to here, or is it more you're trying to grow more Native American style?
It depends. Last year we did green chilies because the festival revolved around green chilies. Mm-hmm. So we grew a ton of green chilies, but we grow a lot of native herbs out there that we use in the restaurant. Tomatillos, a lot of different, Cherokee purple tomatoes and a lot of things like that. So we can actually utilize those in the restaurant
That's
as
great.
Well.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
Thank you
for bringing all this
all right,
food in.
So before we get back to Howard and Courtney, I just want to quickly thank the people that make the show possible.
Mm-hmm.
The people at Georgetown Bagelry. Andy, what do we say about their bagels?
They're pretty good.
Yeah, they're outstanding. He snarps them down. Neighborhood Restaurant Group, that's the Two Rusticos, Evening Star, Tallulah Vermilion, Buzz Bakery, Columbia Firehouse, Birch and Barley, and Church Key. Our good friends down at Founding Farmers and Farmers and Fishers, mm-hmm. especially John Arroyo. Hi, John.
Mm-hmm.
And our friends from Modus with the folks that own and run Notte Bianchi Circle and Dish Plus Drinks.
Yes.
Great restaurants in town.
Absolutely.
So, Howard and Courtney, let's get back to you. Courtney, let's just make sure everybody has the nitty-gritty on how to get tickets and where the event is and all that.
Absolutely. As we mentioned, the event's on Friday the 25th at the Boeing Company, which is in Roslyn, Arlington. And tickets are available on our website at thereadingconnection.org.
And if you can't spell that, you got problems. You should come to the event. You better come.
Who are some of the chefs participating?
Absolutely. We have 10 restaurants that are participating. We have Artisan Confections, Baby Cakes, Eventide Restaurant.
Wait, Baby Cakes out of New York?
Baby Cakes out of Northern Virginia.
Oh, okay. There's a big Baby Cakes out of New York.
Hudson Restaurant and Lounge. We have the Java Shack, Lebanese Taverna, the Liberty Tavern Restaurant Group.
Great group.
Ping Pong Dim Sum, Restaurant 3, and Willow Restaurants.
Oh, we're good friends with restaurants, right? Good. And Ellis, you've got some great restaurants.
Very excited.
To be there.
And Howard.
Yeah. Howard,
step on here with Chateau O'Brien, Chaim's Chateau O'Brien.
Yeah, I get it.
Tell everybody how to find it on the web and where you are. When Markham, Virginia is, what, about an hour and a half from here?
Nah, about here it's about an hour, door to door. Go Interstate 66 West, exit 18, look left on the hill, and I renovated an old French chateau. You can see it right off the highway. Very easy. Less than a minute from the exit.
So are we moving in there next? Is that
no, you're not. I like it, but not that much.
When the ambassador throws us out.
I'll talk to the ambassador about having to stay there longer in your place. How about that? But while you're doing your late harvest tonight, I can do the apple wine, but I like to pass around for your dessert, the Lily O'Brien's chocolates.
Okay.
I represent them on the East Coast, except New York City, because there's a Lily O'Brien's Chocolate Cafe. I'm the only one. I don't eat sweets, but my lovely wife, Debbie, does.
Hi, Debbie.
And she's certainly a connoisseur of all these. So
are you listening,
pass
Debbie?
Them around. The ambassador's already shared themselves.
Okay, so what is it about these chocolates? What is it about these chocolates?
Yeah, the chocolates, being the Irish thing and the connection, we go there because we do Irish cheeses. And the last time we were there, where the O'Briens are all from, the Dromoreland Castle area, they were putting them down on the turndowns, and my wife was eating mine for 10 days, and sure enough, flying back, she contacted
them.
I'm sure
she loves this. Go ahead.
Yeah, and she does. Believe me. She eats my profits right there.
My 8,000-pound wife.
No, she's not. She's in good shape.
You want to be divorced again?
No.
That's right.
And so we represent them, and it's just a collaboration with the chocolates and stuff, and the entrepreneurial thing still goes with those, but I sell tons of them.
That's terrific.
Great collaboration.
I'm not going to tell her that you called her tubby.
I never said that. Don't get me in trouble, man. I get myself in trouble enough, believe me.
There he goes.
All right. Well, we want to thank you very much for coming in and pouring all these delicious wines. And
thank
it sounds like a great event. So if you haven't bought tickets to it yet, this is your opportunity.
And it's my opportunity to jump in and say that if you are not on the list, areyouonit.com, you crazy, man, because the list literally lists everything that's going on in the greater Washington area on the food and wine scene, restaurants, special events, cooking demos, wine seminars. And the crazy part about it is we do it for free. Nikki does all this for free. It's free to subscribe. So just go to the list. Are you on it? Subscribe. You'll find out what's going on. You can also follow Nikki on Twitter to get those last minute tweets on stuff happening. And every Sunday on WTOP, which is 103.5 FM, our sister station, at 10 of 1, you can find out what's happening that's cool during the week.
Well, and actually, what we're talking about today on WTOP is our charity of the week. Restaurants all around the city are doing fundraisers to help raise funds for the people in Japan. With the cherry blossom season here, it's hard not to think about what these people are going through over there. So many restaurants in the area are doing all different kinds of fundraisers, and we wanted to feature a specific one because this just popped up yesterday.
Well, about 20 restaurants have gotten together under the direction of Chef Kaz Okochi from Kaz Sushi, and he's got top chefs like Nora Pouillon and Riz Lacoste and Robert Wiedemeyer and Jose Andres and more.
Yep, all of them.
To join him in auctioning off meals and tastings and classes on eBay for the disaster relief efforts. The first online auctions are for a tasting menu for two at Kaz Sushi Bistro and for dinner for two at Perry's, which would be fun, at Adams Morgan. And more are going to be posted. Go to dchelpjapannow.com in the coming days. And
I actually checked it this morning. Several more restaurants have posted things to be auctioned off. So this is a great way to get something for yourself, but really all the funds are going to Japan, and you really need to get involved because they need our help.
Lots of places in the world are a mess now, but you know there are places where there are wars where people could decide to stop killing each other, but in Japan they can't decide to stop suffering from the triple threat there. So if you can help out, that would be great.
Absolutely. And as we do on every show, we like to leave you with a quote. Usually it's little. This one looks very, very long.
Yeah, this is a sushi quote. No, from Robert Whiting. Everybody knows who he is, right?
No.
Blank. No. Crickets. He says, you've got loggers and fishermen in Seattle who didn't know what sushi was a decade ago, And now they're eating it at the ballpark and wearing headbands with kanji letters on them. That's quite a transformation, and it's true. We're now a sushi society, but eat responsibly
and sustainably.
So we want to thank our guests.
Please.
Howard O'Brien and Courtney Kissel. Mm-hmm. Sorry, Courtney.
All right.
Koki and Felipe Osio, Ken Blakeman, and Chef Richard Hetzler, and of course, the ambassador. You were great. You were all great guests, and we had a great show. Thanks. Pay attention to next week's tweet for our guests next week. And we're coming back to TV on the WRC cable channel, Washington Nonstop, in about 3 weeks.
Everybody have a delicious week.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFM HD2 Manassas, WTOPFM HD2 Washington, the Washington, D.C. home of Navy Athletics.
This is a paid commercial program and may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to the Lifelong Wells Nutritional Hour with the phenomenal Cheryl Wells. This program will feature the fastest nutritional discoveries available, and our special guest will talk about natural healing and prevention methods in caring for your health. And now, here's Cheryl Wells.
Hello, everyone. How are we all doing out there? This is Cheryl Wells, and you're listening to the Lifelong Wells Nutrition Hour. I'm so excited about today's show because we're going to be talking about a revolutionary, unique product on the market called BioVaxin. And we have a guest on today whose name is Mr. Tom Lemus. It gives us great honor to introduce to you a nutritional expert by the name of Tom Lemus. You may have heard of him. He's written many books, has been on many shows, and has researched many nutritional ingredients. Such a remarkable, intelligent man. Mr. Lemus will introduce us to the exclusive BioVaxin.
Good afternoon, Cheryl. How are you?
Great. Thank you, and welcome to our show.
Good to be here with you, Cheryl, and hello to all of you out there.
I want you to begin by telling us how you discovered this wonderful natural creation called BioVaxin.
First of all, I want to tell you that my association within the nutritional industry is a result of the impact that nutritional deficiencies had on my life at a young age. I lost several family members that were close to my heart. When I was 9 years old, my mother suffered and died of lung cancer. She didn't drink or smoke. My father also had many health challenges. He suffered from arthritis, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, and diabetes. Sadly to say, he passed in his mid-40s. I also had a nephew who had been suffering since the day he was born from leukemia. He left